Hi, this is Sedge Thompson. Welcome to this special audio highlights podcast from West Coast Live. For more information about our shows and other guests and podcasts, wcl.org. Calvin Trillin rode his bicycle today to be here. And will you please welcome the man who knows, who's covered murder mysteries, the American Civil Rights Movement, food in short pieces and long, and he's often written, and he also wrote a brilliant novel about parking in New York City. Will you please welcome Calvin Trillin to West Coast Live. Thank you for stopping by. Taking a bicycle, you take any chances as a bicyclist in New York City?
No, I'm very cautious. Actually, it's a good place to bike. It's topographically, Manhattan, you know, the state it most resembles is Nebraska. It's absolutely flat.
That's an association I'm sure New Yorkers like.
Well, I'm from Missouri, so it's sort of a concrete prairie as far as hills goes. And I've been riding a bike in New York for, I guess, 40 years probably, and I haven't shifted gears yet. I really literally been the same gear the whole time.
Which is that? What you find good?
The good gear. You know,
and you're riding with a helmet, I'm pleased to see.
Yes, my daughters have become very strict about my helmet, and they have people all over the city to drop a dime on me if I'm seen without a helmet. So I have a helmet, yeah.
I wonder about that phrase, drop a dime. That used to refer to making a payphone call, which are tough to find nowadays. People have got cell phones. How do you drop a dime on a cell phone? I don't know.
I these people would report me one way or another. They would
an email, drop you and yeah, drop an email.
They would text message me. Right.
I saw a bicycle the other day. It was a kid's bike, little tiny kid's bike, training wheels on it. It had the largest lock and chain on it around that post I'd ever seen. And then there are these strange sights of just a bicycle tire or...
Yeah, I don't understand that. My bike, I don't think I'd really have to lock my bike. It's a really pretty awful looking bike. And I tell people that underneath my bike is a $3,500 Italian racing bike, but it's very hard to tell. And there's a security ratio that I think the intellectuals call the chain schleppiness ratio. The heft of your chain compared to the schleppiness of the bike. And I have a pretty hefty chain and a dreadful looking bike.
Well, that says that you have confidence, I guess, in the chain and also the good-natured citizenry of New York City. Right. You've also the highest paid poet per word in The Nation magazine, and you often run on politics. We have coming up a major sporting event on Tuesday, and I wonder if you have any sort of words about this.
I'm actually the highest paid poet in the country.
Oh, in the country, the whole of the country.
Because I get $100 no matter how many words I write. And most poets are paid by the line. Yeah. Yeah. So if I write a four-line poem, I'm the New Yorker's the highest paying per line magazine at $10 a line. I always say you can see why there's not a huge crowd in front of the poetry booth at the Career Day Fair, right? I get $100 no matter what. So, for instance, and so when I want to get that buzz you get from working at the top dollar in your field, I write a two-line poem, like when George Bush's college transcript was revealed in the 2000 campaign with no apparent effect on the campaign. I wrote a poem called "Obliviously On He Sails." With marks not quite as good as quails.
You got $100.
$50 a line.
$50?
That was a $50 a line poem. I've had a little trouble with the candidates. I am concerned. I mean, people have various concerns in this election. My concern is that politics has been attracting people whose names are not good for rhyme or meter. McCain is a good name. He's not as good as Ross Perot, a purely iambic and well-rhymed candidate. Obama is a problem because I used up a lot of those rhymes with Osama bin Laden. Yokohama, slap your mama.
Well, there's a campaign button I saw that said, "Stop the drama, vote Obama." And that was made up by some kids in Illinois, I guess.
I might steal that, Seth. Well, that's about $50 right there.
Oh, yeah.
Right. The Republicans are not. Mitt Romney, I'm happy to say. I actually brought a couple of Mitt Romney poems along. Would you like for me to read one of those Mitt Romney?
Sure. What do you do with your old Edwards and Giuliani material?
I'm happy to see the back of Giuliani, to tell you the truth. I was...
What was the headline I saw here? You know, they're happy to have him remain, you know, former mayor.
Right.
Yeah, that's his role.
Giuliani wasn't a bad rhyme. Edwards was not good. Here's something called Mitt Romney as doll. Yes, Mitt's so slick of speech and slick of garb, he reminds us all of Ken and Barbie. So quick to shed his moderate regalia, he may, like Ken, be lacking genitalia.
Ken or Oscar.
Yeah. Here's a Giuliani poem.
Oh, all right.
It's got a long title, but it's only four lines long. It's $25 a line.
Do they include the title?
Title. I just throw in the title.
A little lagniappe.
Yes. Pat Robertson, protector of traditional family values, endorses Rudy Giuliani, a serial adulterer who's pro-choice and does not think that people tolerant of gays should be destroyed by hurricanes or other natural disasters.
That was the title.
That's the title.
Oh, it's free.
It was absolutely free. Do politics mandate strange bedfellows? Sure. So Pat's for a person whose views he'd disparage. Yes, politics mandate strange bedfellows, sure. However, where Rudy's concerned, so does marriage.
Oh. You don't think that's one he clipped out and put on his bulletin board or his refrigerator?
I don't know about that. And then I think I should read one Democratic poem. This is called He's Just My Bill. A reprise of the Showboat classic is sung by Hillary Clinton after the South Carolina primary. Along came Bill. He wouldn't shut his trap. He yammered at the church and at the shopping mall. He tried to knock and mock Barack, and all that palaver just turned off the voters. But I will not say, oh, Bill, please stay away. He just may still draw voters my way in Super Tuesday's votes. If so, he's still my Bill. I was just pleased that the governor of Illinois decided not to enter the race, Rod Blagojevich. I mean, he was my nightmare, to tell you the truth. And you use up, you know, rhymes. And Bush is not a good rhyme. Bush, it sounds easy, but it rhymes with tush. But it's disrespectful. I never use that. He did do me some favors. He appointed Alberto Gonzalez, which obviously rhymes with loyal Uber Alles.
Did you use that, or you just tried it out?
No, I use that. Yeah. It's too late now for Gonzalez rhymes. Gonzalez rhymes are on the remainder shelf at this point. Yeah.
Was Nixon somebody that could be a rhyme? Were you writing poetry about Nixon?
No, I started writing poems with the other Bush in the White House, and he Fortunately, he had a lot of middle names, so you could rhyme. When he left, for instance, I wrote a poem that was, "Farewell to you, George Herbert Walker. Though never treasured as a talker, your predicates were often prone to wander nounless, off alone. You did your best in your own way, the way of Greenwich Country Day. So just relax and take your ease and never order Japanese."
For those who may remember that sushi experience. So the election's coming up. That's, of course, you know, a big topic. Parking is another one. And I read in the city's newspaper, the New York Times, one of the city's newspapers, that in Berkeley, California, where we sometimes do shows, a protest group has gotten a parking spot for 6 hours once a week. They won't get a ticket for overtime parking in front of the Marines recruiting station in Berkeley to drive them out. Now, it seems to me that Berkeley being a place of free speech, that, you know, why would you do this? I mean, Berkeley is a place where there should be a place of great, you know, political debate. There should be a to and fro-ness of it, not just a fro-ness. I don't know. Could you imagine New York doing the same thing, giving parking privileges to a protest group out of something?
Well, they wouldn't give privileges. They would ticket the guy every hour. somebody in Boston, when I was touring with that book, which I'm not here to boast, Seth, but I believe was the first parking novel. Somebody in Boston said there was tradition in Boston that if it snowed and you shoveled out a spot, that you could put a chair there or something and hold the spot, that it was your spot if you had shoveled it. And I said, in New York, that's firewood. I mean, there's a...
But there's been a movement now where people will put out lawn chairs and tables and lamps in a parking spot, kind of take back the street.
Yeah, that's wrong. Parking, speaking for parkers, and doormen try to do that in New York. They say they paint their curb yellow and try to tell you it's no parking, but it's not no parking. And the rich people are just going to have to crawl over your car because a spot is a spot, and it's holy.
I was very interested to read that some of your travels in search of interesting food took you once as far as Hong Kong, where you found yourself considering eating very strange parts of creatures.
I didn't come here to blow my own horn, Seth, but I think I was the first person to say deer penis on national television.
That's not D-E-A-R.
No, D. It wasn't an epistolary reference, you know. It was D-E-E-R, deer penis. And I was on some television show, I can't remember which one, and the host said, "Have you ever eaten anything rather strange?" And I said, "Well, in Hong Kong once, we went into a restaurant feeling rather adventurous, and they had on the menu double-boiled deer penis." And I thought about ordering it, but then I was afraid they'd bring it to the table, and I'd take a look at it and say, "Why don't you take it back and have him boil it one more time?"
Is that the sort of item that you could find in one of the Au Courant restaurants here in New York City?
No, but there are a lot of items that you used to think that weren't here that are here now. I mean, duck tongues, for instance. You probably didn't even know ducks had tongues.
No, I can't even imagine what their size is. I thought they just kind of vocalized kind of a quack.
It's a smallish tongue. And not much of it is edible, I would say.
Is this a flavoring?
No. You get a whole mess of duck tongues and eat them up. No, it's a plate full of duck tongues. It takes a lot of duck.
Yeah.
I don't know what they do with it.
I always thought that making shrimp pate out of those little shrimp livers was pretty amazing, too.
They can do remarkable things in Chinatown. They can, and they even have a bus service. It's something you ought to see while you're in New York, that all the college kids take, that goes to Boston for $20, unless there's a price war on it, go $10, Washington. I mean, and then you can go, there's a bus that goes back and forth from Manhattan Chinatown to Flushing Chinatown. It costs $2. Probably serve duck tongues on the way. Throw in free duck tongues.
You could have, I imagine, a dish of duck tongue dumplings, which if you've had enough sort of rice wine or something, might be tricky to say after a while.
Duck tongue dumplings, no.
Anyway, well, any plans to be back on the New York stage, doing a one-man show? Not to toot your own horn.
No, I think that I'm through with that. I'm just sorry I didn't buy a smoking jacket during one of those runs. I mean, I could see myself. The nice thing that, you know, I had a show, it was in the bottom of the American Place Theater, which is way downstairs, the main auditorium. And one of the advantages of my show is if there had been a nuclear attack, we would not have been affected at all. I mean,
could still be running.
Oh, the audience and cats would be incinerated. Yeah. We wouldn't even know it happened unless try to get a cab when we got out. And it was over at 9:30, so you could get into any restaurant. And I found it was sort of interesting until I did 2 week runs of each time I did it, and. It's sort of interesting for about 10 days. And then I found that I was saying more or less what I said the night before. And I found myself sort of thinking about other things while I was talking, like picking up the laundry and stuff like that.
I've heard that actors in the middle of a Shakespeare play doing the same thing for 20 nights start, you know, ruminating, going through their shopping list.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you do all that stuff that piles up. We always called in our house administrative caca. That piles up, and it's in your mind, and if you're saying the same thing over and over again, it just comes out in front. You know?
Do you think that way when you're riding your bicycle? Do you allow your mind to drift as you're just going through Nebraska of the East here?
I ride my bike in two ways. I use it for errands a lot. I often go to Chinatown to pick up soup or something and wander around. And then I go up the path on the Hudson, which has really been a great enhancement to the city. And when I do that, I listen to something on either on the radio or my daughters have just given me an iPod. And until then, I was making do with a cassette tape recorder, and they decided that I was embarrassingly primitive. And
so, Dad,
right. But the iPod they gave me has television on it as well.
Oh, good for bike riding.
Yeah, you kind of hold it out in front, and theirs don't have television. So I said to one of my daughters today, "You people are so yesterday." I mean, you're walking around in 1958. So now I'm going to start doing. I've got all these downloads, so I could listen to. You have an a podcast?
Yeah, we could get you the show, yeah.
That'd be great. I appreciate that, Seth.
Calvin Trillin, thanks so much for being here on West Coast Live. Thank you. This is Edge Thompson. Thanks for listening to this podcast. Try out others from West Coast Live right here, and we look forward to having you in one of our audiences one day. For more information, wcl.org.